Hello.
Suave.
Yes.
I was in a meeting. I just read your text.
It is January 9th, 2026, and producer Julieta Martinelli steps out of a meeting to answer a call.
He is getting out today?
I'm heading right there to the nursing home right now.
It's a call that we've been waiting for a long time.
As we speak, they're trying for him out now. The reason they didn't tell us yesterday because the policies, they can tell you when they're coming on.
Julieta's on the phone with Suave, a former juvenile lifer and the subject of our Pulitzer Prize-winning podcast about life after incarceration. I met Suave over 30 years ago and stayed in touch with him for decades while he was in prison. Then, in our podcast, Suave, we documented his release in 2017 and his reentry. Julieta was a producer and host of the second season of the podcast.
In our second season, we met Suave's mentor and father figure in prison, a man in his 90s named Frank Ross. Frank was awaiting a decision that could grant him his release from prison. And today, there was finally news.
Oh, shit.
He is being transferred as we speak.
Okay, I'm trying to find a flight tonight as soon as possible. How do you feel?
Man, emotional. I mean, yeah. That man been in prison. Yeah.
After nearly 50 years behind bars, Frank Ross was free. There were no friends or family waiting outside the prison gates. Frank was transferred alone in a gurney.
That's because Frank is being released under Pennsylvania's Compassionate Release Statute, also known as a medical transfer. That's a law that creates a pathway for seriously ill people in prison to be released to seek out better health care on the outside. Frank has been battling cancer for years. He's now terminal.
Do you remember when the only big weight you felt on your back was that you couldn't do anything for him?
Yeah, I remember that.
For years, Suave told me about the guilt and the regret that he felt at leaving Frank alone inside after he was released from prison. Frank taught Suave how to read and write. He mentored and he fathered him along with hundreds of other young men in prison. In exchange, Suave always thought that he would help care for Frank in his final days when they were both in prison.
Yeah.
You know,
and look what's happening. Oh, I can't believe it. Okay, well, this took me totally by surprise, but I'm happy. I'm happy for you.
Now, Suave could repay the man who had given him so much, and Frank Ross would just maybe have an opportunity for a dignified death on the outside. Maybe, because nothing in the prison system is ever predictable or simple. From Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, Released to Die, Part 1. In this three-episode mini-series, we are going to follow the story of Frank Ross. He's a 93-year-old man sentenced to die in prison. And we're going to follow his journey to the outside through something known as compassionate release. Frank's case highlights one of the fastest growing trends in incarceration in the United States. It's something experts call the graying of American prisons. We'll also take a deep dive into Pennsylvania's compassionate release program, how healthcare inside prisons is failing older people, and what it means to have a chance to die free. Between 2001 and 2018, more than 30,000 people aged 55 or older died in prison. Experts say those numbers are on the rise. Never have there been so many older people behind bars, and the number is steadily rising. By 2030, they will be one-third of the prison population.
The reason? Harsh sentencing practices that started in the 70s and peaked through the 80s and 90s to today. Data shows that this led to more people than ever serving long sentences, including life without parole. And you've probably heard the term, mandatory minimums.
Coupled with three-strike laws and other tough-on-crime policies, that meant more people going to prison and for longer periods of time. Prison populations exploded with vast racial discrepancies in sentencing. And with so many life sentences or decades-long sentences, it was only a matter of time until those people became older and sicker, with prisons unable to meet their healthcare needs.
That's part of the reason why almost every state and the federal prison system have some kind of compassionate release policy. It's a way to grant early release from prison to sick or elderly incarcerated individuals who have no other real avenue within the court system. In Pennsylvania prisons, where Frank Ross is, an incarcerated person may petition the court for a temporary transfer to either a hospital, a long-term facility, or hospice. In order to be considered, someone like Frank must meet 7 different parameters. Most importantly, they must be seriously ill and expected to have less than a year to live and be able to prove that their healthcare needs are better met on the outside. If they were to be cured of their terminal illness on the outside, they could be returned to prison.
Compassionate release is for people who know that they're going to die. The question is, will they get to die on the outside? And that is all Frank Ross hopes for. Julieta's going to pick up the story from here.
The day of Frank's release, Suave rushes to the healthcare facility for seniors where he's been transferred. Frank is already there, in a shared room separated by a flimsy curtain surrounded by bare white walls. He texts me to FaceTime him.
You want to talk to him?
Yes, hi. Okay. Hi, Mr. Ross. Congratulations.
No, you don't have to do that. Just talk to the phone.
Oh, no. It's the first time he held a cell phone.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow. Technology's really changed.
Frank tries to put the video call on his ear. He's never held a cell phone. He was convicted in 1980 and was always kind of an old school guy in prison. He never even got a tablet.
Hi, Mr. Ross. How are you? Congratulations.
This guy has got a good look right now. I'm just picturing that way. I mean, he looks better than he did on television.
Really?
He's lost some weight. He looks good.
On his first day out of prison, Frank seems primarily occupied with Suave's weight. I mean, he calls Suave his son, after all.
He looks good, right? How do you feel?
Well, I'm talking about him right now.
Now, Frank is hard to understand. He's 93, he's lost his teeth, and he doesn't have dentures. Besides the ravages of cancer, he's also struggling with cognitive decline due to dementia. Over the last few years in prison, he was mostly bedridden, sometimes in a wheelchair, and fully dependent on other incarcerated men to care for him.
Yeah. How are you today?
I'm very happy because of your news.
Are you going to come to visit me tomorrow?
I am, yes. I'm getting on a plane tonight so I can see you tomorrow morning.
Whenever, I'll be here.
Before we hang up the phone, Frank lays down his chief interest in letting us in to make this series. He's hoping it will help him bring some attention to his writing.
I get him an agent because he's trying to get some of his work out.
You have your bosses and stuff with you?
Yes, of course. We're going to try to get you an agent.
Frank hopes to get more of his writing published before he dies. The only item Frank insisted on bringing with him from his prison cell was a box filled with stories, nearly 5 decades of writing. To understand who Frank is as a person, you have to understand that above all, he is a writer, and writers dream of sharing their love of words. That's how Suave and Frank crossed paths 3 decades ago at a maximum security prison in Philadelphia. Suave was in his early 20s, and Frank was in his late 50s. We actually told this story at length in an episode of Suave Season 2, but I'll give you a summary.
Hey, Frank, what's going on, buddy?
This is a phone call between Suave and Frank from 2023, when Frank was still in prison.
Not much, but I'm over here, man. I'm over here telling my people how much you showed me when I was in prison, right? And what did you do?
I learned how to do bright pictures since I've been here.
How many screenplays have you written?
Well, I got 45 now, and I got about 90 short stories.
45 screenplays and 90 short stories. A portion of it was published. Frank was profiled in newspapers decades ago. Some of his books are still out there for purchase. And more than a writer, Frank was a teacher.
There was hundreds, if not thousands, of people in the DOC that he showed how to read and write. And I was one of them.
Frank was an old head, an old-timer, and someone who commanded respect. Suave says Frank didn't really get involved in prison politics. He never got in trouble, and he minded his own business. When he took a liking to someone, though, he approached them with a curious proposition.
He was one of the dudes that he had enough heart to step to me, I guess. He was like, hey, young boy, let me talk to you. And I used to tell him, look, man, what can you get for me, right? And he's like, I got some pen and paper for you.
That's how he and Suave became close. Suave was illiterate, but over time and under a teacher like Frank, Suave learned how to read and write. Frank then encouraged him to pursue an education, and Suave eventually graduated with a bachelor's within prison walls. Frank did the same for countless others. Over time, Suave learned that Frank had made a promise to try and atone for his mistakes and to help others. Here's another old phone call with Frank when he was in prison.
I've been incarcerated for 43 years for first-degree murder.
In his late 40s, Frank was convicted of killing a man. Until then, he had never been in trouble. He was a war veteran. He had a business, a wife, and kids.
I used to call him the late criminal. Family man, grown kids, first time ever arrested in his life.
Frank doesn't claim to be innocent. He accepted his life sentence and in prison put the old version of himself away. He refused visits, he asked his family to move on, and spent nearly his entire time in prison completely alone, except for the young men that he took under his wing. Now, years later, as I prepare to go meet him in person for the first time, I think about a conversation I had with Frank over the phone as he waited for his compassionate release application to be reviewed.
In my conversation paper, I didn't say I earned the right to come home, which I don't think you ever do if you take somebody's life. But I asked for mercy, that's all I asked for. And I can't ask for no more.
Frank said he would never earn the right to come home. He took someone's life. All he was asking for was mercy.
When we come back, we learn more about what it means to receive compassionate release, and we hear about Frank's challenges of trying to start over, even though he's terminally ill. Hey, we're back. Before the break, we learned about Frank Ross's life, how he ended up in prison, and the challenges of his release under Pennsylvania's compassionate release law. Senior producer Julieta Martinelli is going to continue this story from here.
The day after Frank is released, I meet Suave outside Frank's door on the fourth floor of a senior living facility in Philly. We make our way into the room. Frank looks frail, much older than I'd imagined. He's wearing an unfastened hospital gown that's fallen down to his stomach. He's hooked to an oxygen tank and fast asleep.
What's up, Pop?
Suave wakes him gently, holding out the balloons.
And I know it's not till next week. I had to take care of you, Pop. I had to take care of you.
Suave lays out a pint of chocolate ice cream, a slice of chocolate cake, cookies, and other goodies.
That looks so,
so
good.
So what I'm going to do, we're going to sing, happy birthday
to you.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Frank, to freedom. Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday.
Frank smiles through the celebration, but it soon becomes clear that he's not doing well. It's at that moment that I notice how swollen Frank's legs are. It looks really painful. And as the sheets slide, I see a palm-sized ankle monitor snapped tightly around his ankle, a mandatory condition for his release. You know, in case he runs away, this man who can't walk on his own or get out of bed. It's not long before visitors start rolling in.
Oh my goodness, Frank Ross!
Frank's face lights up. First his sister-in-law and then his friend Muhammad. They spent decades together in prison. Muhammad is 84, out for a year now, after securing his own release under commutation from the governor.
I got mad.
Yeah, baby. Yeah. Hey, man.
Yeah.
It's my pleasure.
Y'all too.
Hey, you look good. Listen, man.
Y'all too.
Swabe called. I said, what? I said, I'm here. Hey, you got a lot of late people coming to see you today.
He's right. Within a few minutes, Frank's bed is surrounded. I count four former lifers in the room, men who all were once sentenced to life in prison and thought that they would grow old and die inside together. Here, free, eating chocolate cake, sharing war stories, reminiscing. Silly things like who still owes who money for commissary ice cream.
He always money from the ice cream, remember?
I don't know what he talked.
They left ice cream in behind.
I don't know.
But how do you feel about, you remember, Frank, when we was all on the same block?
At some point, Suave walks off and stands by the door. I see him discreetly wipe his eyes with his sleeve.
Huh?
How do you feel?
Emotional. I see him smile. Look at him smiling. See him smile and not have to worry about count time. I just think that for us, this is what it's all about. Changing policies and bringing people home.
Good to see you again.
Hi, Uncle Frank.
Let me get out the way.
I step out of the room to give the family privacy as Frank meets nieces and nephews and other family for the first time.
You know who I am?
Oh, that's Larry.
Huh?
I'm
Scooby. Oh, oh, man.
Yo, I heard so much about
you. On the way out, Suave tells me that he feels overwhelmed. He says he's worried about how frail Frank looks.
This compassionate release stuff, to me, is bullshit. It's really bullshit. Because I can't remember where he's at. Sitting in the bed with an ankle monitor this big. You call that compassionate? First of all, I want to say I am extremely happy that somebody decided enough is enough, right? But now I'm also extremely mad that this man should have been released 10 years ago when he first got cancer.
Yeah. The thing is, legally, Frank couldn't be considered for compassionate release any earlier, even though he's had a cancer diagnosis for years. Frank is representative of an issue that many others are also facing. There are currently more than 10,000 people that are considered senior citizens in Pennsylvania prisons today. While there aren't public numbers on how many of those are ill, and have also submitted petitions for compassionate release, we do know that only 54 people have been granted compassionate release over the last 15 years.
Advocates say the problem is in how the compassionate release statute is written. While it's meant to remedy the crisis of those aging behind bars. It falls short of actually being able to assist many people because of the built-in requirement for their deaths to be imminent. And in the midst of their illness, they also have to be able to find a lawyer to take on their case. The reality is that by the time someone like Frank reaches this age, their closest family members have often already died, or those connections to the outside world have faded over the decades.
Not to mention that if, like Frank, they're lucky enough to be granted release, they must remain under constant monitoring. That means wearing a heavy and sometimes painful GPS tracker on their body 24/7.
And remember, they can't seek out healthcare to get better. If they were to be cured of their illness, they could be sent back to prison. So, people like Suave, lawyers and activists in Pennsylvania, have long asked, where's the compassion in that? We'll be right back. Hey, we're back.
Where are we going?
So we're in Philly now. I'm looking at, I think, 30th Street Station. We're in a car on our way to Germantown, which is a little bit in the suburbs.
A few weeks later, we're in Philly again, this time with Maria. She's known Suave since 93. And while he was in prison, she often heard Suave talk about Frank on the phone.
And yeah, the team is reunited. Suave, Julieta, and me on our way to meet Frank Ross. I'm so overwhelmed because it's real life.
Suave has been spending nearly all of his time outside of work with Frank.
I just stay there all night, hang out, because it's 24 hours a day visits. So I might just go in at 6 o'clock at night, leave at 4 in the morning, come back at 8, and he probably won't even know I'm gone. Because by the time he wake up, he see me. I always tell people what I'm doing for Frank Ross is what I couldn't do for my mother when she was on her deathbed, which is take care of her.
Suave's mother died before he was released from prison.
I mean, I wouldn't want somebody to do that for me if I was in my dying bed. So this is what I should have been doing, you know? So I'm just doing it for Frank.
When we arrive, Frank is wearing a sweater, sweatpants, and tennis shoes. He's seated up in his chair, hair combed, waiting for his visitors.
How are you? Good to see you, Mr. Ross. Look at you with your lunch. How you doing? You look good. I didn't even recognize you when you walked in. Thank you.
Suave walks over to Frank and hands him a folder. It's filled with typewritten pages, short stories that Frank once mailed to Suave while he was in prison.
I'm gonna show you something. I got it.
They talk quietly as they look through the pages.
They have this little secret communication thing going on, which I just love.
It's a new thing. They got everything there.
Look at his stuff. Frank had a picture.
Following an afternoon eating hoagies, Frank's request, laughing and sharing stories, Frank turns to me.
You're like old man. Like old man. They'll tell you that I'm what's that word? Dementia?
Yeah, dementia.
Did I tell you that?
Yeah, this morning.
Yeah, okay.
He asks me again if he's already told me he has dementia.
And that is so cool explanation, man.
Frank says that dementia feels, quote, cuckoo crazy. He says he first realized he had it a few years ago when he had to be hospitalized and taken outside the prison.
All kind of cuckoo stuff is running in your head.
So what does dementia feel like? All kinds of cuckoo stuff running in your head.
I remember what you thinking of my mother. And she was in the house, and she was dirty. The hair was matted. She was about your complexion. She's black. She looked horrible.
He describes a moment in the hospital where he was suddenly transported back to the house where he was born in 1933. His mother was there, but she was dirty and her hair was matted. She looked horrible, he says. He started crying.
And I remember waking up crying. I couldn't believe that's my mother. And then I met my back issue. You know what I mean?
Frank says that's when he started asking questions, and he realized that he was seeing and hearing things that weren't there, things that had already happened, or things that he simply imagined. But all of it felt so real.
I was the only one who knew I had it. Other two didn't even know that. You talk to them about something, they walk in and come back, and they forgot it.
He says it was in that hospital that he realized that he was surrounded by other dementia patients. He would talk to them about something, and then they would forget and have the same conversation all over again. He realized then that he was the only one that knew he had it.
I knew I had it, but I didn't know how to control it. They control you.
But he couldn't control it. It was terrifying.
I don't know how I'd be able to even tell you. I don't know why he didn't tell you how adamant. I know.
Suddenly, Frank gets really agitated. He's mad at Suave for not telling us that he has dementia, just like the men he met in the hospital. Suddenly, he forgot. Dementia is a progressive, irreversible syndrome. It leads to memory loss, cognitive decline, and reduced functional ability. The disease, coupled with his cancer, is starting to ravage his mind and body. I stop recording. On the way out, I can see the hurt in Suave's eyes. And it's then that I realize how limited our time with Frank really is. Frank has made it clear to me over and over that he wants his story told. But I fear we're fighting against time. And soon, Frank is going to have to take on another fight against the prison system, who will attempt to take him back. Over three episodes, we'll explore Pennsylvania's compassionate release program as it stands, as we continue following Frank's life on the outside.
He didn't recognize me. He didn't recognize me at all. He's like, get the fuck out of my room. I don't know who's you. You're an imposter.
The private healthcare system within the state's prisons, which many incarcerated people say fails to provide adequate care.
A half an hour later, he came back and he said, Ms. Scott, I'm sorry to tell you, you have breast cancer.
We'll hear from people attempting to change these laws so that incarcerated men and women can be released to receive the necessary care that the law demands before it's too late, and the ways in which a system that he is too sick to remember still holds Frank's fate in his hands.
The DOC already put a petition to revoke his compassionate release. They took it to the courts, and now we got to go to court Tuesday.